Welcome to episode 55 of the Pirate Monk Podcast. Coming to you live from high atop the Mellow Mushroom here in the heart of metropolitan Franklin, Tennessee. I'm your host, Nate Larkin, here with our fearless and peerless engineer, the Commodore, Armando Grimes.
Greetings.
And our special guest.
Yes.
None other than the fabled Joe Bean. I have heard his name around this town here for, I think, ever since I showed up. Finally got a chance to meet him. We had lunch last week.
Yeah.
And to my amazement, he agreed, even though he came in late last night from a speaking engagement down in Texas.
I would appreciate that. Yeah.
To join us here this morning on the Pirate Monk Podcast.
Great.
Listeners, you're in for a treat. You're going to love Joe Bean.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. So normally we talk about what we've been doing
last
week.
Yeah.
But this, since we're double recording, what have we done the last 15 minutes is more appropriate.
Well, why don't we talk about what's coming up? I'll tell you what, I got a big weekend rolling.
Okay, well,
it's coming up.
Yeah, what are you doing?
Well, Saturday night is the Brewfest here in Franklin.
Yes, it is.
On Main Street.
Yes, it is.
Tickets for which I have not yet purchased.
I haven't either.
And they sold out last year, and I was left out in the cold.
Uh-oh.
And, yeah, I had to lean on my friendships in order to get some of the nectar.
Yeah.
But that's Saturday night. Sunday night, mm-hmm, at Marinetti's, my wife's 65th birthday party.
Really?
Oh, my bride turns 65. And so we're going to have a 1965 birthday party for her.
That's cool.
At Marinetti's. I've hired the Wanna Beatles to play.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
you're
little Beatles tribute band.
Yeah, you're going for it. I like that, man.
We've got and all the Marinetti's treats and all that kind of stuff. And my youngest son, Daniel, has brewed a special keg of chocolate stout for his mom's birthday.
There you go.
Available as well for those who partake.
That's awesome.
Looking forward to that thing. And then the very next morning, I climb on a plane for China.
Yeah. How long are you going for?
2 weeks.
2 weeks, okay.
Yeah, really looking forward to...
Explain that. What's happening there?
Well, you know, I have a fascination with China that goes back more than 35 years. Mm-hmm. Wrote my senior thesis on the history of Christianity in China. Mm-hmm. I remember the closing line of that paper was, "It remains to be seen whether Christianity will survive in the Middle Kingdom." 1978, we had no idea. The last we'd heard, there were maybe 2 to 3 million Christians in China. But then, you know, the communist government had done everything it could to obliterate religion in general and Christianity in particular. Kicked out all the missionaries, nationalized all the church property, executed all the top leadership, imprisoned all the middle leadership, banned church meetings, made it illegal to own a Bible. Mm. And when the curtain came back up, we got our next look in, and about 1987, we'd found that where there had been 3 million Christians, there were now about 60 million Christians.
Wow.
The biggest explosion of the church since the first century. And growth continues. It's hard to know exactly how many believers there are in China now. Most estimates, somewhere around 100 million. It is a very exciting place to be. And I am so looking forward. I'll be in three cities. I'll be in Beijing. Mm-hmm. I'll be in Xi'an, which is the ancient capital. Mm-hmm. And I'm also going out to Henan province, which is the poorest province in China. But incidentally, it's where the revival is the strongest.
Wow.
I'll be looking forward to spending some time there.
That's sweet, man.
That's awesome.
Well, good. So we're going to have some meetings later on. We'll put those in.
But now
we want to get into the meat and potatoes.
Okay. Well, all right. So what we'll do is we'll do a mini meeting break, and then we'll be back on the Pirate Monk Podcast. It's time now for the mini meeting. I'm going to toss the book to our friend Steve Wire.
Hi, I'm Steve.
Hi, Steve.
Welcome to this meeting of the Samson Society. We're a company of Christian men, and we are also natural loners. We've recognized the dangers of isolation and determined to escape them. We're natural wanderers who are finding spiritual peace and prosperity at home. We're natural liars, and we're now finding freedom in the truth. And we're natural judges who are learning how to judge ourselves aright. And we're natural strongmen who are experiencing God's strength as we admit our weaknesses. As Christians, we meet other times for worship or teaching, for corporate prayer. Today, however, we meet to talk. And our purpose is to assist one another in our common journey. We do so by sharing honestly, out of our own personal experience, the challenges and encouragements of daily Christian living in a fallen world. And our faith rests in the love of God as it's revealed in His Word and in the life of His Son. This is the great fact of the gospel, which is the foundation of our charter. We've now reached the sharing portion of our meeting, and in sharing, we speak honestly out of our own personal experiences. We tell the truth about ourselves, knowing that our brothers will listen to us in love and hold whatever we say in strictest confidence. We try to keep our comments brief, taking care to leave plenty of time for others. We address our statements to the group as a whole, rather than directing them toward any one person. And as a rule, we refrain from giving advice to others or instructing them during the meeting, believing that such conversations are best reserved for private moments between friends. Today's conversation and topic will be courage. So who will have the courage to begin? I can start. My name's Steve.
Hey, Steve.
Courage is an interesting topic because growing up in church, growing up in Western culture, growing up in the evangelical church, when I look back on my life, many of the things that I thought I could define at that point as courage were not courage at all. It was vanity, probably veiled as courage. It was somewhat premeditated. It was premeditated disclosure, posturing, spinning, all to the glory of God. And it left me hollow. It left me 20 years in the church, experiencing total, complete dualism in my life. I couldn't be really, truly courageous to speak who I really was, and so I had two people. I had the Christian me, and I had the real me. And it wasn't until I ended up in a very broken place that I had the courage to even acknowledge to myself who I was or what I was. And I guess the other side of that, I experienced tremendous freedom. If you can find the courage to step into truth, as God's Word says, the truth sets you free. But it's an act of courage. You have to be courageous enough first to admit where you are to yourself, and then to step into what Samson has been for me, which is admitting who I am and where I am to another man, because that's where healing begins. So when I think about courage, that's what I think about, and I'm Steve.
Thanks, Steve. I'm Nate.
Hey, Nate.
And I think, you know, deep in my heart of hearts, I'm a chicken. I really am. And it's embarrassing to have it exposed. I remember years and years ago, we were on our way driving here. We were moving here. And I'd loaded up a moving van. My wife was following me in our car. And I put our pet dog in a steel cage beside me on the front seat of the moving van and covered the cage with a blanket so to keep it dark in there. And in so doing, blocked my view of the right-hand mirror on the truck. and charging up the Florida Turnpike, and in the left-hand lane, and then moved over to the right-hand lane, not knowing that I was forcing another vehicle off the road. It was a family, a vacationing family, in an SUV, and I forced them off the road, and their car actually rolled, and I saw it in my rearview mirror, and I didn't want to stop. I wanted to pretend that it hadn't happened or that I hadn't seen it. This thought went through my head: if I just keep driving, maybe nobody will catch me. You know, I instantly felt responsible. I knew it was my fault, and I was terrified of what would happen to me. My wife called me on the cell phone, and I pulled over. And I'd gone almost half a mile down the road. It was a long hike back. But the worst part of it was that I could feel my own fear. I saw how small I was. I saw how despicable I was. And here was a family deeply hurting, and I, at that point, didn't even have the courage to face and acknowledge the consequences of my own actions. I wish I could say that that's an isolated incident, and that, you know, I've faced up to every other challenge and acknowledged every other fault with courage, but that's not the case. I'm not as fear-driven today as I used to be, but fear is still very present. But here's what I've learned. I remember a guy saying to another guy in a meeting after the meeting at the pub years ago. I can't even forget what the guy had to do, but he had to do something that was really difficult. And another guy leaned across the table, touched his arm, and said, "Can I lend you some courage?" And the truth is that an awful lot of men have lent me an awful lot of courage over the years. I get congratulated about being courageous to tell my story publicly, but didn't even have the courage to say I was a sex addict until I sat in a circle with other men and heard them say it. And even then, it took a few weeks before I could get enough. I could be encouraged enough by their courage to begin to face my own faults. I gain courage when I know I'm not alone. That's why this brotherhood is so important to me. I gain courage by anybody. You know, I think together we're braver than we are alone. I know that's true for me. Mm-hmm. And you know, on my own, I'm not a very courageous guy. As part of a company, I think I'm courageous to the point of being dangerous. And so I'm grateful to be in a fellowship of, you know, frightened men who are becoming courageous together. Thanks.
Thanks, Nate.
Thanks, Nate.
Mondo.
Hey, Mondo.
Courage has so many layers for me. Personally, I believe not only to face your sin, admit it, confess it, repent to the Lord is definitely a courageous act. But then to do it to brothers, to people, to humans, is a whole nother level of courageousness. And I think, you know, for me to not only, you know, in my story, not just have that first part, but also to still dwell in the same surroundings where you may have made your mistakes in life.
Mm-hmm.
To not flee that geographic area. to still see the same people you may have been afraid to see before, or be shameful and you don't want to see certain people or don't want to run into them, but to be willing to face the day and say, you know what, you know, you can't live your life running from your sin, from your past, from your decisions, and definitely not from people. You know, courage has taken on a whole other layer for me in that aspect. But there's so many layers again. I mean, there's that geographic part of it, but there's also, you know, sharing with men and sharing with a group of people who either know you or don't know you, but the fact that you're putting your junk out there. I mean, heck, this mini meeting is is an act of courage for me. But I find that there's so much more peace in that. You know, the thing that I think a lot of guys are afraid to express a courageous act or effort or gesture or whatever because of that fear of what may happen, or it may put me in the spotlight or may put me in the hot seat or whatever it may be, or have to do something that, you know, I really don't feel like doing. But I found that after you get over that hump, there's so much more peace and trust. Like, all the things you really desire to have are on the other side of that courageous act. But we're just blinded by that fear. And if you could just muster enough courage and energy or positive attitude about it, you know, it's like, you know, for instance, who wants to get up and go work out in the morning? Like, who really feels like hurting? But you know, on the other side of that, that act, there's benefit. And for me, I have to look at it like that. You know, I definitely think that courage is, at one point in my life, looked like arrogance. It wasn't just, hey, he's the greatest guy. It won't come off of being a little arrogant, because I've been willing to do anything, this and that, on the surface. But below the surface, not too courageous. You know, because I didn't want to, you know, again, you know, coming from a culture of, that's your business. Keep that to yourself. We'll pray about that thing you're dealing with. Well, you want to know what the thing is? No, not really, but I know you're dealing with something. Yeah, exactly. And but I think it's a whole other level, man, to be able to communicate it and audibly just come out and be able to dump, which I think is what's great about having a Silas, what's great about Samson, is the fact that you can be courageous in a safe environment. Where I think a lot of guys, we think courage, we have to be courageous in a 50-50 environment, safe, potentially not safe. We're not really sure. But to know you're in a safe place, or with, you're with a safe Silas where you can just dump, that's a really good start.
Yeah.
That's a really good start. And I think courage really, in those two areas, really trigger a lot of different things of, one, where how far I have to go, but also how far I've come. And it's actually a big word in my book these days. So. I'm Mondo.
Thanks, Mondo. And that's it for today's mini meeting. We'll be right back on the Pirate Monk Podcast.
There are people who have left the problems of today, leading to conclude that for them life is not the way. But every problem has an answer, and if yours you cannot find, you should talk it over to him. He'll give you peace of mind. When you feel your life's too hard, just go have a talk with God.
And we're back on the big podcast.
Yeah.
Our host this week, Mondo.
Guest, you mean?
I mean, yeah.
You're the host.
I'm the host. At least for now.
At least for now, yeah. One more time, no.
And once again, for those who are listening and wondering, where in the world is Aaron Porter?
Yeah.
Aaron Porter is trapped on a 20-passenger bus
with junior high students.
Uh-huh.
Boys.
Yep, driving down the coast of California somewhere. But he'll be back next week on the big podcast. Our guest in the studio is Joe Beam, the founder of Family Dynamics and Love Path. I can't tell you how much I really enjoyed our lunch last week.
Well,
so great.
Enjoyed it
to
too. Thank you,
Keith Branson, for putting that together and you know, keeping on me and I'm sure on you until it finally happened.
Yes, he's pretty persistent.
Tell us a little bit about your story. You're a little bit over 30 years old now.
Yes, matter of fact, I just turned 62.
Okay.
And I realize I look 30. Sometimes I tell people I'm 30, and then they raise their eyebrows, and I say, but I've had a very, very rough life.
You were in the ministry, were you not?
Yes, that's where I started off.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, how'd that happen? Raised in a Christian home?
Well, I went to a very small Christian school in Montgomery, Alabama, which is now not so small anymore, Faulkner University, but it was very small back in those days. It was even a different name back in those days. As a matter of fact, every institution I ever graduated from changed the name after I left.
Oh, did they really?
Sort of a consistent pattern so far. But yes, was a minister for 15 years and got into trouble. Mm-hmm. Because of my own weaknesses, my own addictions, mm-hmm. and wound up leaving my wife. Of course, I was dismissed from the church, as you would imagine.
Sure, yeah.
For some reason, they took umbrage to the minister doing the things I was doing.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah,
as they should have, they terminated me. So then lived a very wild lifestyle for about 3 years, going places I never thought I'd go, doing things I never thought I'd do, saying things I never thought I'd say. Stealing people's narcotics if I visited their house, mm-hmm. realizing they kept their muscle relaxers or their prescription painkillers either in a cabinet in the kitchen or in the bathroom, one or the other, and I'd steal it and drink quite heavily. Mm-hmm. By the grace of God, we were able to put the marriage back together in 1987. We've been divorced for 3 years.
Wow.
And so we're coming up on our 24th anniversary of being married again this time.
Wow.
That's
awesome. And I'm a strong believer in people helping people, such as through programs like you do.
Yeah, yeah.
And I need to know. That's one of the reasons I have so much fun having lunch with you, is because you're transparent, you're open. Mm-hmm. And as you and I know, that's where the health comes from.
Sure.
When you can trust people with that.
Yeah, I got to be careful not to cast your pearls before swine, but there are people it's not safe to be completely transparent with.
That's exactly right.
But not as many as I thought there were.
A lot of people crave the transparency. Yeah. We were just talking before we came on here that I was speaking for a church yesterday in Mission, Texas, which is in the very bottom of South Texas, close to Brownsville, right on the Mexican border.
Yeah.
About 3,500 in attendance there. That's irrelevant except to say that's a lot of people. And about half Anglo, half Hispanic or Latino. Mm-hmm. And I told maybe 30 seconds of my story as I spoke to the church yesterday morning.
Yeah.
And people were streaming out the door saying, thank you for transparency. We need transparency.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, wow, there's a lot of people who want it, who need it, but don't know where to be it.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I had much the same experience this weekend speaking in Cincinnati. Of course, I was there specifically to tell my story and did it some length.
Mm-hmm.
One guy came up to me afterwards and he said, "I don't recall receiving a royalty check from you." You're out here telling my story.
Yeah.
But lots and lots of people thanking me for the transparency, and some people saying, "Man, I wish we could say that at my church."
Mm-hmm. As a matter, and you and I both know there are some churches where you can't.
Yeah.
I recall speaking at I won't name this university, but a major university once, and speaking to church leaders they had brought together.
Yeah.
And afterwards, one of the people wrote a review and saying a person like Joe should never be allowed to speak to church leaders.
Oh.
Because of where I had been.
Yeah.
You know, I just told my story.
Yeah, yeah.
And it made me unacceptable. And I thought, well, I'm glad I don't go to church where he does.
Yeah. Exactly.
It must be so sad. Well, as a matter of fact, it must be. I know it was. That's why I got into trouble to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
If I could have somehow been transparent and open, I think I could have found help.
Yeah.
But hiding it. As you know, we are as sick as our secrets. I'm sure you've told your audience that many times.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Now, the first ministry that you and your wife founded, I guess it must have been now about 7 years after you all got together.
That's correct. 1994.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You started Family Dynamics, which is a fascinating organization. And by the way, I've sent several couples to Family Dynamics weekends.
Good.
With great results. Tell us about it.
Well, we first started Family Dynamics to work couples who were not in trouble, thinking let's work upriver, not under the waterfall. And we developed a program that is now called Dynamic Marriage, and based on work by Bill Harley out of Minneapolis. And we did that, and over 100,000 people have been through that program, I guess. Mm-hmm. And it's designed to help people not get into trouble. Well, in the course of that, of course, we found many couples who were in trouble, and this wasn't quite intense enough for them. So at Family Dynamics Institute, we started a weekend intensive called A New Beginning. Mm-hmm. Started that in 1999. Family Dynamics, even though Alice and I are not still there, they still do that weekend with great results.
Yeah.
In 2008, we left to start a new organization called Love Path International. Some of the things we wanted to do are a little difficult to do in a nonprofit.
Yeah, yeah.
Donors can be a little touchy.
Yeah, because you wind up talking about sex.
Yes, as a matter of fact, been invited on several national TV programs like Today Show, et cetera, et cetera, because they're fascinated that they're Christian sexologists.
Yeah.
I think they're even fascinated to think that Christians have sex. I told them that's where all those little Christians come from.
Yeah.
Now, we too do a weekend for couples in crisis. That's actually more intense than the one Family Dynamics still does. And Family Dynamics still does it and does a great job. I'm not trying to denigrate that at all.
Sure.
But we kind of go a step above that, and God blesses it. There are marvelous success records. 9 out of 10 couples that walk in the door, one partner does not want to be there.
Wow. But
they come either to get a better deal in the divorce or to get the pastor off their back or so their kids will quit making them feel guilty or mama made them. Uh-huh. Our success rate is still 77% since 1999. And quite a few, as you would imagine, come in with extramarital affairs.
Mm-hmm.
If 10 couples walk in the door, 7 of them either are still in or coming off of an extramarital affair. Of those 7, it will be the wife. 5 will be the wife. 5 of the 7, it will be the wife who's involved with another person. And quite often they are, quote, madly in love, end quote, with the other person when they come to our workshop. Our success record is still, by God's grace, still 3 out of 4.
Wow.
So, yes, that particular workshop is not about sex, even though I teach a lot about sex.
Mm-hmm.
It does lead back to, obviously, a good, healthy sexual marriage. So, right now, most of our time is spent helping marriages in crisis. We're developing new products right now to help people have better sex lives in their marriages.
Yeah, yeah. And that really is where I'd like us to go in this conversation. I wound up, by the way, I used your name in vain many times this weekend.
And they all thought you were talking about Jim Beam, I'm sure.
Jim was mentioned.
I'm sure he was. He also worked with marriages, but in a different way.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the guys that I had meals with this weekend, some of the national leadership with Pure Hope and some counseling guys. The focus of the weekend that I was doing was on, illicit sex.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so I was talking about, the absolute necessity of working the other side of the equation.
Mm-hmm.
How do we create or nurture healthy sexual relationships in marriage,
mm-hmm.
So that we don't push a guy who's got sexual problems into sexual anorexia? We pretty much tell him he's got to be, for the rest of his life, a non-sexual being.
Mm-hmm.
How do we make the sexual part of marriage more fulfilling,
mm-hmm.
Within the Christian home? And I'm just thrilled that God has called you and you have responded to work right in that arena that so many Christians just get squeamish with.
Yeah, I think you have to reach a certain age before you can really do that.
Yeah.
Like, for example, Dr. Ruth, everybody knows who Dr. Ruth is. The reason that she could talk so openly about sex and nobody gets offended is because nobody can picture her having it.
Yeah.
And now that I've reached that stage in my own life, we know that people develop a sexual self-schema. Mm-hmm. That is fancy language for saying everybody has their own filter about how they interpret sexual signals. We also know, you and I know, and I'm sure you've talked about it many times, that at the end of chapter 6 of 1 Corinthians, when Paul is saying to the single Christians in Corinth, quit having sex outside of marriage, he didn't say, go take a cold shower.
Yeah.
In chapter 7, he says, but because there is so much immorality, each man should have his own wife, each husband, a woman her own husband. The husband should fulfill his marital duty to his wife. Obviously, the logic there is that if you get married to have a way to fulfill your sex drive, and then in marriage your sex drive is not being fulfilled, mm-hmm. you've gone from the proverbial frying pan into the proverbial fire. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, now what do I do?
Yeah.
And so he was actually commanding the Apostle Paul. Now, some people say, well, there you go, it's a man. Well, but this was a celibate man, mm-hmm. inspired mm-hmm. by the Holy Spirit.
Yeah.
And he writes that we are supposed to be fulfilling each other in marriage. Now, it's difficult, obviously, to, in a church, preach on that from the pulpit.
Sure, yeah.
When Natalie Morales, one of my visits to the Today Show, Natalie Morales was interviewing me, and she was under the assumption I was preaching about it from the pulpit, how to have great sex lives. And I
yeah.
said, most churches, you're not. That's not where it's going to be done.
Yeah,
as
yeah,
you and I
yeah,
know,
yeah.
We do it in some other arenas, but my fear is that we're just not doing it much at all. When Paul said that the older women should teach the younger women mm-hmm. how to love their husbands at home, that had to be more than baking biscuits.
Yeah, yeah.
Although I'm sure that was involved.
Yeah.
I mean, Southern boy, baking biscuits is a very essential process. but they were teaching each other how to be. Well, how to make love. Mm-hmm. And in every era, I mean, again, I'm 62. My first education about sex was from two farm boys in the fourth grade
yeah.
at recess because they had seen it on the farm.
Yeah.
So we didn't hear about the birds and the bees. We heard about the cows and the pigs.
Right.
But that was our education level. Now, as you know, the number one method of sex education is internet pornography. But in these Christian marriages, I had one Christian woman actually say to me once, Nate, she said, all my life I was taught, it's wrong, it's wrong, it's wrong. Oh, you're getting married tomorrow? It's going to be great. And she couldn't make the transition in her mind.
Right.
She said, what I need is some Christian authority figure. Mm-hmm. You know, a pastor, an elder in a church, somebody. Some Christian authority figure to tell me that it's actually okay to enjoy having sex with my husband. Mm. So I think that you're right. We have to do what you do and fight against the illicit sex. No, it's just so rampant.
Yeah.
But I think we have neglected just as much, if not more so, that we actually as Christians, particularly older Christians teaching younger Christians, that there can be a great, fulfilling,
right.
joyful sex life. Many years ago, a friend of mine in Montgomery, Alabama, by the name of Ed Welch, Ed's mm-hmm. been very successful. You mentioned mm-hmm. China. Ed helped do some of the missionaries into China a few years ago. And his wife died about 3 years ago of breast cancer. Ed is in his 70s. Back in the mid-80s, I remember him teaching a Bible class, and he was teaching men. He said, when my wife and I enjoy a particularly wonderful sexual experience, we get off the bed on the side of the bed on our knees and thank God for this wonderful, wonderful experience of love. Now, at the time, I thought that was stained glass language. It was like, yeah, you really do that.
Yeah.
I told him a couple of years ago, that Gene is gone now. I told him a couple of years ago, I said, Ed, I remember you teaching that. And I finally came to understand you were telling the absolute truth. It is a spiritual union as well as a physical union. In his great Southern accent, he said, Joseph, you tell these young people this is important. He and Gene made love up until 3 months of her death. Mm. And he said, it is from God. It is the way a husband and wife can most deeply communicate. Words are important, without a doubt. Touches are important. But in this, the two really can, emotionally, spiritually, mentally, and sexually, mm-hmm. become one.
Yeah. The physical expression of a spiritual reality.
Yeah, that's a good way to say that. I could have short-circuited all that and just said that. It was really good.
Now, Joe, you are pursuing and actually close to concluding a doctoral degree from the University of Sydney under the, what is it, the,
well,
under the biological,
yeah,
tell us about the program.
The Australians do it a little different than we Americans. It's actually what's called the Faculty of Health Science, Biomedical Science Degree in Sexology.
All right.
Yeah, it's not as simple as ours, but they're consistently rated one of the top 50 universities in the world. And interestingly, Dr. Patricia Wirikun, who heads up a lot of the sexuality stuff at University of Sydney, is an evangelical Christian.
I see.
She's from Sri Lanka. She loves Jesus. She loves people. And is a great person to study with because she understands my belief and value system.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which, in the field of sexology, mm-hmm. in the large and growing field of sexology, mm-hmm. The Christian value system is not generally highly regarded.
Actually, it's pretty well looked down on. Mm-hmm. If you go to the World Congress of Sexual Health somewhere, every other year in America, the researchers all come together to make their reports. I went the year it was in Sydney. Recently, it was in Madrid. You'll find that every religion is treated with very much respect, except Christianity. Mm-hmm. We Christians are viewed as being hypocrites. Mm. As a matter of fact, one speaker said, your evangelical leaders tell people not to use their genitalia, and then your evangelical leaders use it wherever they want to. Mm-hmm. As you know, some of our names have been in the news.
Yeah, yeah.
And so they tend to apply that to all of us, which they know better than these are researchers. They know this is not logical.
Yeah.
But it's easy to pick on us because our value system is not the same.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, you said to me over lunch that one of the difficulties that you have, I mean, there is a tremendous amount of good research out there.
Yes.
From which you can gain valuable insights.
That's correct.
One of the problems in interpreting this research, though, is that what many researchers will call sexual inhibition, we will call morality.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Right. Some of the tests, for example, there's a sexual excitation, sexual inhibition inventory. There's a version for men, there's a version for women. And yes, like some of the things they would say, well, you're sexually inhibited, we'd say, well, no, that's just part of our belief system.
Yeah.
We don't do those things. They also have a sexual attitude scale. And, well, I don't know if this is appropriate or not, but in many sexuality programs, when you're getting your higher degree, and I picked Sydney for one reason because I did not have to do this, is they basically have a sexual attitude readjustment program. What that means is they put a whole bunch of you in a room and they show every form of pornography known to humankind, mm-hmm. all at the same time, 360 around you.
Yeah.
Everything you can imagine, including bestiality. Mm-hmm. And you're supposed to be in there long enough that you begin to desensitize to all that and say, well, this is just how humans have sex. And it's actually designed to desensitize whatever moral beliefs you have.
Yeah.
And many sexual programs require you to take that.
Yeah. You know, I noticed in the SA meetings, the Sexaholics Anonymous meetings, in which I, God used to save my life, where I was given the gift of sexual sobriety some years ago.
Good.
I remember one time being in a meeting, I noticed early on that seemed to be a lot of doctors in the meetings.
Hmm.
I went to one noon meeting where there were six of us there, and I was the only guy who wasn't an MD.
Really?
Since then, in getting to know some of these doctors, I found that a common thread in their stories is many of them went through medical school in the 70s and 80s when part of their training was this intensive weekend when they were locked in a room and shown pornography for 48 hours straight. The idea being that was going to desensitize them to, I don't know, you know, the naked human body or whatever it is.
I didn't know that.
And you put that together with, you know, this kind of, with the obsession, you know, the obsessive compulsive mm-hmm. tendencies that are necessary to do something as intensive as go all the way through medical school and mm-hmm. residency, the isolation that comes with it, you know, all the other things that make a man or a woman in the medical sciences vulnerable. And you got a recipe for disaster.
I wasn't aware of those things, but that makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we're going to take a break here, and when we come back, I'd like you to talk a little bit about porn with us, if you will.
Okay.
We'll be back in just a minute here on the Pirate Monk Podcast.
Oh, a pirate's life is a wonderful life, a roving over the sea. Give me a career as a buccaneer, it's the life of a pirate for me. Oh, for me.
And we're back with Joe Beam. Joe, is it my imagination or has porn gone completely mainstream? Is it now a part of the culture?
Yes, absolutely. Most teenagers have seen it. As a matter of fact, the average age of exposure when I was a boy, it was, you were 11 or 12, and it was somebody's Playboy, which is basically nude modeling. Today, it's as young as 6 or 7, and it's hardcore. 15 years ago, if a 6-year-old acted out sexually, we knew there was like a 99% chance he or she had been sexually abused. Mm. Now, if a 6-year-old acts out sexually, we have to consider the possibility that he or she may be emulating what they have seen on their computer.
Right, yeah.
Which, of course, is still sexual abuse, but not the same kind as before, if you will. Mm. Therefore, people are growing up with this expectation. I'm often invited to speak to teenagers, and their response is, but it's not hurting anybody. Mm-hmm. And we're naturally drawn to that, so what's the big deal? Now, these are Christian teenagers, the ones in churches that I'm talking to. I don't think it's even questioned anyplace else.
Right.
And it's just like, this is a part of the passage of life. And I have said in secular meetings, actually talking about different things altogether. I was in a radio meeting once with all these morning announcers and mm-hmm. personalities and et cetera. And one of them said something like, said, well, like when you look at porn. And next to me was a table full of women. And they said, yeah, that's right. That's like when you look at porn. And I'm thinking, it's just, you can talk about it anywhere. Mm-hmm. We do this. This is fine. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, people that go to church make it a little bit more shame-based.
Yeah.
And if they're conservative people, they make it a little bit more shame-based in the sense that we may not talk about it to others. But it's a given. Mm-hmm. I just did a little poll. It was not a scientific poll on one of my websites. And only 50% of the people responded that no porn was used in their home. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They were 7% said it was only the wife that used it, not the husband. Interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, yes, it's extremely mainstream now. And it gets into mainstream movies, not just the soft core stuff of nudity.
Right.
They're now making movies. Meg Ryan was even in a movie that had hardcore in it. Yeah. I didn't see the movie, but I surely read about it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And what is the price that a man or a woman pays long term for porn use?
I think there's several. One is that the average female porn star, quote unquote, is in the business from 3 to 5 years and then they're out. Mm-hmm. And Nina Hartley, who has been in that business since, she turns 52 this month, by the way, and she's been in there since she turned 25. Mm-hmm. A very articulate, very intelligent woman. She graduated magna cum laude from nursing school, okay, and has been a very vocal proponent of porn because she's in the industry. Yet she tells young women thinking about getting into porn, if you do, 35 years you're going to be out. And while you can change your appearance and the average person may never recognize you again, your father, your uncles, your brothers, your cousins, all of these people will always know, can you live with that for the rest of your life? Well, that's just the people in the business. If you look at a couple doing it, whatever age that starlet, for example, was on that video that they made it, that's as old as she'll ever be on that video.
Right.
My wife's 62. I'm actually one day older than my wife.
Okay.
Which is pretty cool because when you get a present, you know you've got 24 hours. At 62, neither of us look like we did at 22.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, if I'm watching porn or just looking at still picture porn, then what I'm doing is I'm training myself to be eroticized by a very different set of breasts.
Right.
Now, my wife's breasts at 62 are physically not going to compare to the breasts of a 22-year-old. Mm-hmm. Yet, if you think about it, which is the better pair of breasts? Mm-hmm. Well, these have suckled my children.
Yeah.
These have held me close when I've been scared or didn't know what to do or I was sick. These are far better. Mm-hmm. So why would I give up my ability to be eroticized by her by training myself to be eroticized by that? And so one of the big things in sexuality and marriage is that you actually lose the ability to be erotically attracted to your spouse.
Yes.
That just gets lost. Another thing that happens is that the true intimacy part of it begins to leave because sex becomes more and more physical. And obviously it has a great physical dimension, but it becomes more and more physical and less about the emotional bond.
Yeah.
The combination of the two. So after a while, sex is perfunctory. It's all about the orgasm as opposed to all about the relationship.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, after a while, it has no relationship.
Yes.
And people drift apart terribly. Now, you can imagine, in the end of chapter 6 of 1 Corinthians, when Paul was arguing to those single people, don't have sex with temple prostitutes, he makes a really esoteric argument. Now, he's talking to Christians there, of course. But basically, his argument is, you've been bought with a price, the Holy Spirit's in you, But God, the Holy Spirit, is not in that prostitute. And if you become one with that prostitute, you're trying to make God become one with a person that God doesn't want to be one with, mm-hmm. because this person is not of God.
Mm-hmm.
So his implied argument, he doesn't say it exactly, but his implied argument is that you're forcing God into a predicament where he's got to decide if he's going to abandon you
mm-hmm.
because of what you're about to be involved in. I think if you take that same principle and apply it to any form of sexuality that doesn't involve just your spouse. So it might be porn, it might mm-hmm. be prostitutes, it might be swinging, it might mm-hmm. be anything. What I'm basically doing is forcing, not only forcing God away, but I'm forcing away any possibility of total and true oneness with any one person.
Yeah.
And that one person, if it's going to be anybody, should be my spouse.
Yes.
So that Dr. Snarsh in his book, The Passionate Marriage, and by the way, with a name like Snarsh, you've got to be good. In his book, The Passionate Marriage, he says the best sex that couples should have is in their 50s and 60s.
Mm-hmm.
But that's only going to happen if they have the right relationship.
Yeah.
Not any other way. So the cost, well, I don't think we can even talk about all the costs. There are just so many.
Yeah.
And a person finally becomes conditioned where that's what they have to have is their drug of choice.
Yeah. And that is so true. We actually condition our own mm-hmm. sexual response.
Mm-hmm.
I was amazed at how I lost an appreciation for the beauty of my wife mm-hmm. in all those years when I allowed beauty to be defined for me.
Mm-hmm.
By an industry in Southern California.
Mm-hmm.
And how over time, as I got some distance from that terribly destructive drug and my sight began to return, I was married to a beautiful woman all those mm-hmm. years, but there were so many years I didn't see her beauty.
Mm-hmm.
And she could tell I didn't see her beauty.
Mm-hmm.
And because I'm the biggest mirror in her life, the fact that she was getting... I was not reflecting truly her beauty to her, and that warped her own self-image.
Which changed her sexual self-schema.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And today I know she's beautiful, and she knows she's beautiful.
Good.
And that is a crucial component to a fulfilling marriage. Well, Joe, I had the feeling we could probably talk all week, but I've got a full week, and you've got a full week. I hope someday you'll come back and visit us again on the Pirate Monk podcast.
I'd love to. I just for the name of nothing else, Pirate Monk. I mean, that's awesome.
In the meantime, how can our listeners find your resources? By the way, you're hard at work on a product, not yet complete, but a series of DVDs that couples are going to be able to watch in their home with mm-hmm. workbooks. To help deepen and enrich their sex lives, right?
Right. There's going to be a Part A and a Part B, Nate. The Part A will be how to overcome sexual difficulties in their marriage. We've got PhD psychologists and MD psychiatrists involved in this project. So Part A is, yes, if there's any difficulty, including porn, whatever it is, if there's any difficulty, here's how you overcome your sexual difficulties in your marriage. And then Part B is, okay, now that you've done that, if you need Part A, now that you've done that, here's how you can make your sex life absolutely wonderful. And we'll be using passages from the Bible in both sections, by the way.
Oh, nice.
That actually show you that the Old Testament particularly has some very erotic passages, particularly in the Song of Solomon,
mm-hmm.
that because it's not in the idiom of our day, people tend not to realize what he's saying.
Yeah.
And so it's going to be pretty good stuff.
How about the weekend? What's the name of your weekend for Marriages in Crisis?
It's called Love Path. That's one word, LOVEPATH, Love Path 911. If people want to find out about it, they can go to joebeam.com. Now, not jimbeam.com, like we talked about earlier. Mm-hmm. He's a different guy. But joebeam.com, they can find our schedule there. They can email and talk to our people there that will help them understand, help them decide if it's the best thing for them.
Right.
We wish that everybody in America would come through it, even the ones that are not in trouble.
Yeah.
So that we could decrease the divorce rate. In America, any given year, about 2.1 million couples get married. In America, any given year, about 1.3 million couples get divorced.
Wow.
That's a lot of divorce.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Joe. God bless you for what you do.
Thank you, Nate, and thank you for your courage, your transparency, and what you're doing to change America and the world. God bless you, my friend.
All right, folks, we will be back on the Pirate Monk Podcast.
Father, heal me when I pray. Send the Savior on his way. Holy Spirit, come and stay. Lord, I'll need you all this day. I am weak and weary, worn. I am bitter and forlorn. Such a dark and dreary land. Come and take my weary hand.
All right, well, time is about out. Yes. We're coming to the end of another great conversation here, Podcast Central. I've enjoyed it, haven't you, Munda?
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. Joe's great. We got to have him back, man.
Endlessly entertaining and fascinating. He's actually invited me to come along with him to one of those meetings of the World Congress of Sexologists.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool.
We'll see whether that happens.
Yeah, absolutely, man.
Well, before we go, want to make sure and remind all our listeners the upcoming 48 Hours of Frankness weekends.
Yes, we have three coming up, and within the next month and a half, we have Atlanta, Georgia, March 25th to the 27th. We have Austin, Texas, April 8th through the 10th, and Orlando, Florida, the 15th of April through the 17th. After that, we'll be Eugene, Oregon, Richmond, Virginia, Denver, Colorado, and more cities to come.
Yeah, yeah. So. All right, super, and y'all can find out more about the weekends by going to the website, SamsonSociety.net, where, by the way, our registered users just topped 4,000.
4,000. Boy, that's awesome.
Yeah, and when you stop to think that only about 20% of Samson guys are on the site,
yeah,
that's a lot of guys.
Yeah, it is, man. Yeah, it is.
We love your letters, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Love your comments, your suggestions, guest suggestions, mini-meeting topic suggestions, anything you'd like to send to us, send to...
SamsonPodcast@gmail.com.
All right. Well, until next week or the week after that...
Yeah, we'll get some China reports.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be good.
We'll say goodbye to now. For now, this is Nate Mondo wishing you all the best from the Pirate Monk Podcast.
Take your day by day.
Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday.
And that's the one step at a time. Give yourself time to heal.
All of my people.
To renew your troubled mind. And everybody say.